Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Wayman. I thought, in honor of Purim, we would talk a little bit about the role of humor and laughter in Judaism, in Halacha, and in Hashkafa. Seems like a topic that might be appropriate for this week. But in order to talk about that topic, I have to first discuss what we won't be talking about. So first of all, in case you decide you may want to leave, we will not be doing stand-up comedy. That's not what the topic means. Again, so shouldn't be any more disappointed after this first second, hopefully. And it will also not be a discussion of which famous comedians are Jewish. There are enough people who talk about that. That won't be our focus. What we're interested in talking about a little bit more in anticipation of Purim is a little bit more of what might be considered a Torah model lecture. Essentially, the role of a sense of humor, the role of laughter within Torah Hashkafa, within the role of Halacha. How exactly does that fit in? And it's clear that we do have a lot of focus and attention, topics of humor and topics of laughter, and it's worth discussing what role can we find within our halachic system and within our hashgafic system for humor to express itself. When we start off, to begin with, there is, at least on a very basic functional level, a clear role for humor. I said that we're not going to talk about how many comedians are Jewish, but it is often commented upon that quite a few are. And it's often suggested that the reason that developed that way, the reason so many Jewish people went into comedy, is it's a response to persecution. Now, when you spend centuries being chased by people, so you tend to develop a sense of humor in order to cope. And when they make that comment, when the sociologists make that observation, so they don't credit it with its original source, which was Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, in his commentary to Chumash, he writes exactly this, commenting on the pasuk in Parshas Bishalach. In Parshas Bishalach, we find that the Jews are running away from the Mitzrim, and things are getting a little hairy, it's a little bit scary, and they scream out, "Hamibli ein kvarim b'Mitzrayim?" What exactly is going on here? There weren't enough graves in Mitzrayim, so you sent us out here so we should die here? So, as Rav Hirsch points out, that's probably not a serious question. They probably weren't really asking that honestly. What that is what we call sarcasm. It was a joke. And essentially what they were doing was developing a coping mechanism that here there's a tremendous stress and tension. So how are you going to cope? You develop a sense of humor. And as Rav Hirsch comments in that same notation, this is what Jews have done ever since. That we've developed a sense of humor in order to cope with persecution, and that is certainly on a very basic fundamental level a major purpose that joking and laughter can serve. If it helps you get through the day, if it helps you hold on to your mental health, so what could be more important than that? And clearly from a basic functional perspective, a sense of humor, the ability to laugh, accomplishes a tremendous amount, even if it was only that. And if that's the case, if it's valuable for your own coping and your own survival to be able to laugh and to have a sense of humor, so then it's not a big leap to understand that it's also a chesed to provide that for others. That if you can make someone else laugh when they're undergoing a stressful situation, so clearly that is also a chesed, that's a wonderful accomplishment, and you don't have to do the math on your own. That's an explicit statement in the Gemara. The Gemara in Maseches Tainis tells us a story that Rav Broka Choza was in the marketplace, and he saw a bigger celebrity than the Jewish comedians. He saw Eliyahu HaNavi in the marketplace. So he thought maybe he'll get some inside information. What's going on in Shemayim? What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans? So he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, he said, "Here's a crowded marketplace. Tell me who in this marketplace is destined for a special reward in the world to come, a special chelik in Olam Haba." So Eliyahu says, "Well, is that guy and that guy over there and those two people over there. All of them are Bnei Alma Da'asi. They have a special portion in the world to come." And then he disappears. Mysterious. So Rav Broka figures, okay, I have to try to figure out what's special about these people. I have to do the investigation on my own. So he asks that guy and that guy and that guy, what do they do? And when he asks those two guys in the corner, what do you do? So they responded, "We are clowns. We're jesters. we see somebody who's sad, we cheer them up. If we see people who are fighting, we try to make them more positively inclined towards each other. And apparently that was deserving of a special reward in Olam Haba. The fact that they cheer up sad people, that is a clear accomplishment of note, a source of merit, worthy of a special chelek in the next world. So there's no question that on a functional, basic level, as a method of coping, whether for yourself or for others, a sense of humor is very valuable. And the Rambam writes, actually, in his medical writings, that if you want to fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, if you want to be able to really bring some refuah to somebody through your company, so if you can tell them some jokes, if you can make them laugh a little bit, so, yes, the Reader's Digest introduced the phrase, laughter is the best medicine, but they didn't introduce the concept. The Rambam writes this explicitly in his medical writings, that this is something that's going to be beneficial to a chole. If you can make them laugh, if you can cheer them up with humor, that's going to be an accomplishment. So clearly, on those levels, there's a lot of value to a sense of humor, to the ability to laugh. We also find that on a pedagogical level, there is a big benefit to having a sense of humor and a big utility. We know the Talmud tells us that Rav would begin his shiurim. When he would start his shiur, he'd begin with a milsa de biduchsa, which we normally translate as a joke. He'd open the shiur with a joke. There were those who thought it couldn't mean that, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden and others, various commentaries, like, how could it be? It must be a riddle, it must be a halachic challenge, it must be something else, but the common interpretation is that this was a joke, that in order to make the students more receptive, he would start with something a little bit humorous, and that would make the rest of his teaching more effective. And by the way, in case you think he had the lower shear of the rowdy kids who just needed this, and this isn't so ideal, so if you look at the language of the Gemara says he was teaching the Rabbanan, he was teaching the rabbis. When he taught the rabbis, this is how he would start with a joke that was apparently useful in order to make his point go through a little bit more smoothly and to get through to the students in a more effective fashion, even the adult Rabbanan who he was teaching. So if that's the case, so then that's another value that humor has, that we're able to teach a little bit more effectively. And the Talmud practices what it preaches. They say that somebody asked, I think, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, said, Rabbi, are there any jokes in the Talmud? And he responded, yes, but they're all old. The problem is that we don't always know how to find them. We don't have enough of a sense of humor, enough of awareness of the culture to know exactly where the jokes are. But there was an article once in Bar Ilan University has a journal called Badad B'chol Derachei Da'eyu. It's kind of a Torah Mada journal. So in that journal, they have an article. It's an article written many years ago, and the topic of the English translated title was Hidden and Revealed Humor in the Babylonian Talmud. And the article is filled with highfalutin Hebrew. It's hard to follow the whole thing, but I can tell you that he has a lot to write. There are many pages in the article. Clearly, he found many examples, which, as he notes, it's not just that the Tanoim, the Amoraim, had a sense of humor, but they felt it was worthwhile to memorialize their sense of humor in the Talmud, what he called jokes with a heksher. So this was worthy of being recorded for the generations in the Talmud. And he has... Sorry?
A year or two ago, a book came out.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Okay, you have to get a hold...
There's a gentleman...
Sorry?
Right,
say it again?
It's called, like, And God Laughs.
Okay, so they have to get a hold of it. So it's clearly quite a lot... The Gemara about Reb Broca is into the...
I want to say that perhaps for the positions amongst us in the audience, this could be used for placebo effect to produce. Because we talk here about a week...
So even if your jokes aren't so good, it could be a placebo.
You confess in the Gemara, where the Tzar is only permitted in us, like the Tzar. So here when we have a doctor with a chronically ill patient, because we can make yeshiva, and get Siyata Shemaya, Rav and Rava, is discussed here in the same Dr. Gemara, and we have to take this very seriously. But Amikal, especially this one, is a joke between God and us.
Alright, so we'll get into that a little bit more. Oh, absolutely. Alright, so let's get into a little bit more about this. So there are, again, many examples in the Babylonian Talmud. Just to give one example that we can identify, our sense of humor is not refined enough to find all of them, but one that's a little bit nageh, not tenyona de yom of this week, but of this coming month. So we're after Purim, we go into Pesach mode. So the Gemara in the beginning of Masechas Pesachim has what's clearly a joke. The Gemara talks about the obligation of Bedikas Chametz, how we have to search our house for Chametz, and we have to search especially those areas where we're likely to bring in Chametz. So the Gemara says, in that context, maybe we have to worry that a weasel, a chulda, will drag Chametz even to a place where we wouldn't otherwise think that we had Chametz. So then the Gemara goes on to say that maybe that's more of a concern the week before Pesach, because since there's not going to be any chametz during Pesach, the chulda is going to stock up. So that's a very impressive weasel. Right? The idea that the weasel knows the calendar so well and knows all the what's a leap year or not, knows everything, knows exactly when Pesach is coming. That's very impressive. So the Gemara asks, is that really so likely? V'ki chulda nevia, it was chulda a prophetess, which is a joke because chulda was nevia, exactly. Right. So this is one example of the Gemara indulging in this sense of humor, and it becomes a very memorable Gemara. So everyone remembers that discussion because of the joke, so clearly it's effective as far as that's concerned. Clearly it has a lot to accomplish and to make its point, and that's another functional purpose that a sense of humor can provide. But there's perhaps a more basic, fundamental service that a sense of humor has. And maybe it's not just practical, but there's something much more yesodistic about it. The Gemara in the beginning of Masechas Avodah Zarah tells us about the Kadosh Baruch Hu's schedule, tells us how God divides up his day. And one of the schedule items in God's daily schedule is that he spends a part of the day playing with the Leviathan, playing with the big fish. And Rav Shechter in a Sefer Nefesh HaRav quotes from Rav Soloveitchik. The Rav Soloveitchik in a Hesped actually interpreted this Gemara. He said, why does the Gemara tell us this? Why do we need to know that God spends a part of his day playing with Leviathan? What is the halachic or hashkafic benefit of having a Gemara that says this? And he suggested that perhaps it actually does have both halachic and hashkafic importance, that it's there to help us fulfill a mitzvah d'oraisa, which appears many times in the Torah, the mitzvah of v'halachta b'dracha, that we have an obligation to walk in God's ways. It appears at least 8 times in Sefer Dvarim, as the Chofetz Chaim points out. So that means we have to imitate God, which is challenging. We don't have the same skill set. What does that mean to imitate God? So normally the Gemara tells us it means to engage in chesed, like tell sick people jokes, things like that. But there are other applications also. And Rav Shechter has an entire kuntrus about this in a Sefer Nefesh HaRav. All the additional applications that we find where the Torah or the Gemara is telling us something about what God does in order to tell us how to imitate him, how to fulfill the mitzvah of halachta b'dracha. So in that case, he says, why are we told about the Leviathan? The message is, we shouldn't take everything so seriously. We have to be able to be a little bit playful sometimes. So therefore, v'halachta b'dracha, we have to imitate God in that way too. So what does that mean? How is that really godlike? How is this a midah that we should imitate, and how is that really associated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I think the idea is, the notion that there is of a halachta b'dracha in imitating God comes from the fact that sometimes another way of saying a sense of humor, we call it a sense of perspective. And the idea is that you know what's a big deal and what's not a big deal. So you're able to laugh at the things that are not so important, because you can tell the difference between what's important and what isn't. And that is extremely valuable, because if you're not going to get dragged down in that which isn't so important, if you're not going to get distracted in trivial matters, so then you can focus on what is important and you can accomplish. But if you can't tell the difference, so then you can't really have a productive life. So in that sense, if we define a sense of humor as a sense of perspective, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for sure, is the epitome of a sense of perspective. So he can see what is important and what isn't. He sees the whole world as it really is. So he knows what is a big deal and what isn't. So we are told that we should try to emulate that. We should try to also understand that not everything is of equal importance. And if we know what to focus on, then we can accomplish our mission in life. And if we know what to not take so seriously, all the better. So we strive to have a sense of perspective in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. So in that sense, perhaps v'halachta b'dracha, we're told to have a sense of humor in the sense of a sense of perspective. And if that's what it means, perhaps we could understand one of the apparently anti-humor Gemaras. There is a Gemara in Maseches Brachos, which was brought l'halacha actually in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, but it's not necessarily a Tisha B'Av concept. It seems to be an all-year-round concept. It apparently is connected to themes of Tisha B'Av. That the Gemara says that it is forbidden, Aser li'adam l'malei schok piv ba'olam hazeh, that it's not right for a person to fill his mouth with laughter in this world. At this point in history, whatever that means, and it's a subject of debate, exactly how we're defining eras here, but at this point, it's not appropriate to fill your mouth with laughter, because of the pasuk that we all know from Shir Hamalos before benching on Shabbos and Yontif. We say that Oz Yemalei Schok Pinu, the time will come when we shall fill our mouths with laughter. But it sounds like right now it's not right. Right now we should not fill our mouths with laughter. So there's a lot of discussion what the implications of that are. Practically, again, it is brought the halach and the Shulchan Aruch, so there's a lot of discussion. Is it a statement about really giving yourself over to complete abandoned laughter? Or is it about any laughter at all? There's an extensive literature about it. Is it lahalach? Is it mis chasidus? There's quite a lot written about it, but perhaps we could suggest that the point is that laughter is really supposed to represent this sense of perspective. And we have to recognize that to fill our mouths with laughter, to think that we have reached 100% perspective at this point in history, we have to recognize that we don't, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has that perspective, but right now, we don't. So there will come a time when, as the expression goes, we'll be able to look back and laugh, we'll be able to see through hindsight how all of history made sense, and then we can look back in life and laugh. But right now, we're not at that stage. But when we reach the wonderful world of Oz, then Oz Yemale, then we can go back and we can see how it all makes sense. So perhaps that's consistent with this idea that it's all about a sense of perspective. And the Gemara is warning us that to think we have total perspective right now, we have to be aware that that's not yet. God willing, the day will come. So perhaps if we take such an understanding, maybe we could apply that a little bit to the idea that Purim has become associated with laughter and with joking around. Perhaps this is a theme that we find really embedded in what Purim is all about, one of the less talked about themes, but a major theme of Purim. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos that Purim is also a time of Kabbalas HaTorah, that even though a few weeks ago we read in the parasha Naseh v'nishma, that we were very excited to accept the Torah, but apparently it's not the whole story. The Gemara says that we had to be pushed there a little bit, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to hold a mountain over our head and compel us to accept the Torah, and it was only after the Purim miracle, after the story of Purim, then we fully accepted the Torah. So the pasuk says, Kimu v'kibel, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. The Gemara says, Kimu ma-shekiblu kvar, that after this miracle of Purim, the Jews actually upheld that which they had initially accepted, not so willingly, and that was the Torah. So clearly there's a little bit of a tension there, because on the one hand, the Torah says, Naseh v'nishma, on the other hand, the Gemara says that we had to be forced. It's interesting, if you read the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Peches, both of these ideas are there next to each other. The Gemara doesn't seem to be bothered by it. The Gemara tells us that we were compelled to accept the Torah. And then the next line, the Gemara says, oh, look how wonderful the Jews were. They said, Naseh v'nishma, how impressive that was. It doesn't sound like the Gemara is bothered by any type of contradiction between those two ideas. Tosfos over there talks about it a little bit. So which was it? Was it Naseh v'nishma? Or was it a pressurized? So they have one approach. The Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Noach suggests that maybe the answer is that we willingly accepted the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah that we were happy to take. But the Torah Shebal Peh, with all of its chumras and all of its diyukim and all of its details, that seemed like that was too much. We weren't interested in that. We weren't willing to accept all of that until Purim time. So in other words, what happened? At first, something seemed like it was too burdensome. It was too onerous. It wasn't something we could handle. But then, looking back in the aftermath of a great miracle, we're able to see, oh, now I see it's beautiful. Now I see this is wonderful. Now I can look back and I can be happy about what in the moment seemed like it was too much of a weight on our shoulders. Now, ki'ilu, you can look back and laugh. And then perhaps that's the idea that Purim has become associated with laughter and with joking around, in that it reflects this theme, that it's about looking and finding the moments of joy in our days and in our lives that we're not always aware of, that we're not always able to appreciate. And perhaps, for example, that could explain an interesting, controversial halacha. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that it's permissible to get married on Purim. Your guests might be a little annoyed, they're not necessarily going to feel it's the best schedule, but if you can work it out in your day, you finish the Megillah and the Suda, you still have time, somehow you can squeeze in your wedding. So Shulchan Aruch says it's permissible to get married on Purim. And some of the commentaries say, why should that be? We have a prohibition, it's actually a prohibition in HaTorah, to get married on Chol HaMoed Pesach and Chol HaMoed Sukkot. We say v'samachta b'chagecha. We have a concept of ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. We can't dilute the simchas yontif with a personal simcha. So that's a prohibition. So you'll tell me, okay, so Purim is midrabanan, it's not min haTorah. All right, so it should be prohibited midrabanan. It should still be wrong on a rabbinical level to have your wedding on Purim day. So some want to suggest, I think the Ksav Sofer may have a tshuva along these lines, or others want to suggest that maybe the idea is that there's a difference in the simcha of Purim and the simcha of Pesach and Sukkot, that regarding the Yom Tovim, the Regalim, so the Torah says, v'samachta b'chagecha, that the simcha has to be in the yontif. And any simcha about anything else is going to be a dilution, is going to be a distraction from the simcha of the yontif. But on Purim, it's not about that. On Purim, we say it is a Yom Mishta V'Simcha. It is a day of Simcha, but apparently not exclusively the Simcha in the day. So if you find other joyous activities on the day and you're able to also squeeze in all the other mitzvos, okay, Matovu Manoim, to be sad, to give a hesped on Purim, that's not appropriate. But other types of joy, that's appropriate. That's not a distraction in the same sense as Pesach and Sukkot would have it. That here it's about being able to find these points of joy within our lives and to recognize how it all comes together. So practically speaking, Purim has become a day in which humor, laughing, joking around has become embedded in the way Purim is observed. And this is an idea that we find already from the Rishonim and a little bit more so, even more recently. That already in the Rishonim, you find this actually, the Rishonim Maseches Sukkah talk about this, Rav Daf Mem Hei. They talk about that in celebrations such as Purim, so there was a more relaxed attitude towards property rights. So for example, if people wanted to joke around and grab something out of somebody else's hand, you wouldn't scream gzela, you wouldn't say that this is theft. We understand this is a part of how they're celebrating on Purim. And if you spill a little bit of wine on somebody's carpet, they're not going to take you to Beis Din. They understand that you can't have a celebration unless we're going to be a little bit more relaxed about some of these things. So the idea that there was kind of an implicit mechila, that there was an implicit waiving of rights in terms of certain minor monetary matters, that you find in the Rishonim already that Purim had such an attitude. And then as you get into more recent centuries, so you find also the institutions of Purim Torah and Purim Spiels, both of which somewhat controversial. Purim Torah had to do with making fake Divrei Torah, fake Shiurim. This is an area we say all the jokes in the Talmud are old, but Baruch Hashem, you know, we keep the culture of halacha alive all these centuries. So unlike other types of comedy, if you read Purim Torah from 200 or 300 years ago, you could actually find it funny because we're still holding in the same sugyas. So we have a tradition. We have a tradition of Purim Torah and also of the Purim Spiels, of the idea that we'd have plays and skits that would be humorous that would take place on Purim. Now, these last two were both controversial. There were many poskim who felt that one or the other was inappropriate. And we could understand why, that there's a concern of taking away from Kavrat Torah, that there's a concern possibly of Chas V'Shalom embarrassing someone. We'll talk a little bit more about that. So there were poskim who were very strongly against Purim Shpils, many great poskim, wrote Shuvas against it, Bavadji Yosef, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, Rav Pam, there are many who were very against the idea of the Purim Shpil. Purim Torah as well, Yosef Dushinsky has a tshuva against some of what was going on. There is a history of opposition. On the other hand, there are those who very warmly embrace these practices. So in many yeshivas, they did have such practices, as we're all aware, in our yeshiva, so we certainly do have these traditions. Rav Schechter has pointed out in the past that our yeshiva was founded by people who came over from the Volozhin yeshiva, which is why we're exactly like Volozhin in all ways. So one of the ways is, if you read the history books, so in Volozhin, so they had Purim Shpils. That was clearly a part of the culture in Volozhin, and they had Purim Torahs, as much written about this. At Purim Rav, they had quite a Purim tradition of Purim Torah and Shpils in Volozhin. So for example, I remember I first heard the story from Rabbi Bleich, and then I saw it in a book, that one of the Rebbeim in Volozhin got up on Purim, and everybody was expecting a Purim Torah, and they were very disappointed that he gave a regular shiur. He talked about a stira between two Rambams, and then he spent an hour and a half talking about the resolution of the two Rambams, and nothing was funny. So the students were very disappointed, and they came over to him afterwards. They said, Rabbi, it's Purim. And he responded, what do you mean? He said, what do you mean? I made up both Rambams. The whole thing was a joke. So there is a tradition of that. And so that's in terms of Purim Torah. And there's also a documented tradition of Purim Shpils. So it's recorded, for example, in one of the books, that in the days of the Netziv, and Netziv was a Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, so the top student at that time was a young man who was named Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and that young Talmud did a spot-on imitation of the Netziv, which sounds very much like our contemporary Shpils. Then, many generations later, would go on to become Rav Cook, and he founded the yeshiva Merkaz HaRav, and the top student in Merkaz HaRav was the great-grandson of the Netziv. And the great-grandson of the Netziv did a spot-on imitation of Rav Cook. And Rav Cook said, okay, I've been paid back for my childhood, for my youth. So this is a tradition that continues. So we follow the Volozhin tradition. So we have this practice here in our yeshiva as well. But it's worth asking, so what about the concerns of all the Gedolei HaPoskim, the very great halachic authorities, who were understandably very worried about this? Now, there are clearly very real risks of taking away from Kavanah Torah, very real risks of embarrassing someone, of Halbanos B'nei Chaver V'Rabim, of forms of Lashon Hara. So how come that isn't a concern? How come, I mean, it's clearly to some it is a concern, how come it's still accepted in many great yeshivas? So you have to figure out a little bit why that is. I think the first answer is that it should always be done under rabbinic supervision. I think that it's not such a simple endeavor, that it is possible to make a mistake in this area. But assuming that you're careful, so what's the fundamental license to do so? So you have to think about it a little bit. I don't think that the answer is, first of all, to say that it's just a joke. So that's not enough of an answer, because the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim both write that Lashon Hara derech schok, Lashon Hara as a joke, is still prohibited. According to one version, it's mamish Lashon Hara. According to another version, it's what we call avak Lashon Hara, maybe second degree Lashon Hara, but they all agree that it's still prohibited. And parenthetically, we should explain that at least when it comes to Lashon Hara, you could maybe hear how it could have been a defense. You know, very often you have someone who tortures someone else, and he says it's just a joke. It's very hard to know why that's a defense. That makes it sadism. That doesn't make it innocent. That if you, in the fact that you enjoy hurting somebody else, that doesn't make it okay. If they both enjoy it, okay. If they both find it funny, so then there's what to talk about. But normally it's not even the beginning of a defense. When you're saying Lashon Hara, so you might say, all right, so I don't mean it seriously, so therefore maybe it should be okay. But the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim both didn't think so. So that's not, on the surface, the heter. So what is the heter? So then you might say, well, it's mechila. The people who are targeted express that they're okay with it. So I don't think that's the whole story either. It's not always the case. But even if it is the case, I don't think that that's the whole story either. Because when we talk about mechila, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, halachically, mechila usually only applies to monetary rights. So if you damage my property, I could say, all right, I'm not going to charge you and you're off the hook. But we call it tzara d'gufa, if there's personal suffering, if you're really hurting someone's feelings. So mechila doesn't work in the sense of before the fact. They say it's okay, you can humiliate me. There's probably no such concept of mechila, and they could change their mind at any moment when it gets too painful. It applied after the fact, you can always be mochel somebody who has hurt your feelings, but the idea beforehand that you can be mochel and say it's okay, it's probably not such a concept in halacha. So I don't think it's about that. So what is the license? I think we could look to a different source in Hilchos Lashon Hara. There is a Tosfos in Maseches Erechin and Maseches Bava Basra that comments, there is a line in those two places, in Erechin and Bava Basra. It's very hard to understand. The Gemara says that Lashon Hara that is said in public, that's what it says in one place, and Lashon we call Ape Tzlasa, and Lashon Hara that is said in front of the subject, we call Ape Mara. It sounds like, at least according to one opinion in each place, that that's okay. It's all right to say Lashon Hara as long as it's in public or in front of the person who you're speaking about. So that's a very difficult topic. Why should that be true? You would think that it's worse in public or it's worse in front of the person who you're talking about. So in general, that is the case. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes. That's clearly the case. Tosfos, among many different interpretations, Tosfos suggests that maybe when the Gemara says this, it means a very specific, narrow context. It's talking about, you're saying something which is a little bit ambiguous. You mean it to be positive, you mean it to come across nicely, but the listener might hear it negatively. So if that's the case, you might say you shouldn't say it. Right? If there's a risk that the listener is going to misunderstand, the listener is going to take it in a negative sense, so then maybe we should say, don't say it in the first place. So to that, Tosfos says, you're right, you shouldn't say such a thing. But if it's in public, or if it's in front of the person, so then that will show the listeners that you mean it positively. Because this was written clearly in the pre-internet era, that anything that you're saying in front of the person you're talking about, or in front of the whole world, so then presumably that you mean positively. In private, in secret, maybe you'll say something nasty, but if the guy's right there, and the people are spread it around, it's going to get back to him, so then we could assume that context shows you that it's something positive. That context shows you that it's something that has a appropriate sense to it, appropriate tone to it. So perhaps that's what is behind our Purim spiels. So when we have our Purim spiels, so the targets are often there, the people portrayed are often present and laughing. So hopefully, if things are done right. So again, it's not always the case, but hopefully that's the case. The targets are the subjects, target's probably a bad word to use, the subjects are there and are laughing. So what does that show you? Not just that they're mochel, because like we said, mechila might not be enough of an approach, although you probably need that too, but that's probably not enough of an approach. But it shows you that the context is one of love and affection rather than any kind of genuine nastiness. That we assume that if it was really meant to be hurtful or embarrassing, so then it wouldn't be done the way it's done. And the context is one in which hopefully there is an environment that's created that is affectionate and loving, and that's how it's interpreted by everyone present. But clearly it's a very delicate endeavor, which is why, again, it's always worthwhile having rabbinic supervision, and it's always worthwhile being very, very careful to err on the side of caution, because clearly it is possible to go too far and to have a serious negative effect on Kavod HaTorah, and God forbid, to embarrass someone in public, which is a tremendously serious transgression. And not only that, but there is another danger. And I think that's crucial to everything we've been talking about, and that's something which I just want to kind of wind down with. That in addition to the concern of taking away for Kavod HaTorah or of hurting people's feelings or embarrassing them, there is also the concern that you might become a malik. That sounds pretty bad, right? So we just had Parsha Zohar. What does that mean, you might become a malik? So there is a striking imagery that Chazal have interpreting a pasuk in Mishlei, that the pasuk has the phrase "Letz takei ufesi yarim," that a letz is hit, is struck, and a simple person becomes wiser from witnessing it. So say Chazal, who's the letz? Who's the clown? The clown, that's a malik. very hard to understand, right? Because if you were going to cast the Amalek movie, right, there's so many different archetypes you could use to convey villain, terrorist, whatever you want to put. The idea that he has big floppy shoes and a red nose and orange hair is probably not the imagery you'd have for Amalek. Amalek is the Letz. Is that really the way to see it? So it's a hard idea to understand. And there's a beautiful essay by Rav Huttner in the first Pachad Yitzchak in Purim. They saw recently that Rav Nevensal has a very similar discussion in his Sichos in Parshas Shalach, actually, that the idea of a letz nowadays in modern Hebrew, including in modern Yeshivish Hebrew, so we use letzanus to mean joking around, and we use letz to mean a clown. But in the biblical and Talmudic usage, it means something else. What it actually means is a cynic, a scoffer. And Rav Huttner discusses this idea at length, that the idea that somebody who's a cynic, who doesn't think anything's important, to quote Oscar Wilde, who knows the cost of everything and the value of nothing, nothing is important, nothing is worth anybody's attention or anybody's esteem, that's a highly dangerous attribute. And that, Rav Huttner goes into great length about this. He says the greatest ability that we have, he quotes a pasuk, he quotes Rabbeinu Yonah, actually. Rabbeinu Yonah comments in the pasuk, Ish lefi mahalo, that a person is in accordance with his praise. So what does that mean? It means that you can tell what a person's about based on what people say about him, how they praise him. We know that's not true, right? That's not really the case. There are many people who are not so deserving who get praised a lot, and many people who are deserving who don't get praised. So what does it mean to say Ish lefi mahalo? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, it means Adam nikar lefi mashehu mehalel. A person can be recognized based on that which he praises. That sometimes to judge someone based on what they do, you might think that's fair, but maybe it's not so fair, because often we have aspirations that are beyond what we're able to accomplish, and that's also a source of credit to us. Whose posters we have up on the wall, who we aspire to be, sometimes says more about us than other things. So you can tell a person based on what he praises. That's what he's really about. That's what he aspires to. So it says before, you see, this ability to praise something is one's most powerful tool in a certain sense, and therefore the koach hazilzul, the ability to knock something down, is the most destructive. And then he goes on to say that that's what leitzanus is. Leitzanus is this attitude that nothing is important, is the expression of the koach hazilzul. And that's why, as I think you referred to before, the Gemara says that here this would also seem like another anti-laughter Gemara. The Gemara says, "Kol etzeinusa asura," that all leitzanus is prohibited. Oh my gosh, so what happens to the perm spiels? Except for that of idolatry. So that we could understand, says Rav Huttner, the idea is that idolatry, Avodah Zarah, that's the ultimate misuse of the Koach HaHilul. The ultimate misuse of praise is Avodah Zarah. The ultimate praise is worship, and the ultimate misuse is worship of idols. So there, the Koach HaZilzul, the opposite, is the appropriate tool to knock that down. But in general, in life, Leitzanus is highly destructive, and the Balei Mussar write that the smallest amount of Leitzanus can push away all the Chachma in the world. All the chachma that you're going to find is not going to get through if leitzanus is present. And I think that's probably also why this comment of Chazal, "Letz take ufesi yarim," is telling us that Amalek, and also Paro, Chazal bring in there also, Paro and Amalek, they couldn't get the message. They couldn't understand what was serious. And we know that Chazal tell us that Amalek was like somebody who jumps into a hot bath, a boiling bath. Everyone says it's too scary, we can't jump in. And Amalek says, yes, you can, I can jump in, and everyone else can too. So the Jews were formidable at that time after Kriyas Yamsuf, and they said, nah, it's not so serious, not so scary, don't worry about that so much. So in that sense, Amalek was a letz. Paro was the letz, because Paro couldn't get any chachma through into his head. 10 makos, none of it made a difference. All the simanim, nothing made a difference. Nothing could enter in. Yisro is the one who became smarter. Yisro was the one who saw all this and said, there's a message. And I think that's why B'davka, This had to be the first half of the parsha. Yisro is where we have the Asaras HaDibros. So the first half of Yisro is telling us there's a Yisro who's able to see what Chachma is. And if you're not like Yisro, if you're like Amalek, you're like Paro, there's no point in getting the Torah. There's no point in all the Chachma in the world because it's not going to get through. But Yisro, who was not a Letz, Yisro was the one who was able to be wise and to understand, and that was important Musar for us before receiving the Torah, and that's why Parshas Yisro perhaps is broken down the way it is. And the Ramban over there writes in Yisro that the Torah tells us that when we had this display of Kolos Uvrakim, of all the thunder and lightning that was a part of Matan Torah, and the Jews are told, don't be afraid, that this is there, l'nasos. This is there, what does that word mean? Says the Ramban, it's there to test you. And in other words, this is something we're putting our comments on somewhere else, that if we were cynical people, if we could look at an amazing display, spectacular thunder and lightning show and say, whatever. So then there's no point. Then the whole Torah is going to be wasted on us. But if we have the ability to recognize that some things are a big deal, so then, okay, we can receive the Torah. So a little bit of Leitzanus can knock out everything. And that, in one sense of the word, that is a quality of a Amalek. And if that's present, that can undermine everything. And that's the opposite of the Jewish sense of humor that we're talking about here. If we say that a sense of humor is a sense of perspective, what we're trying to obtain on Purim is the sense of what's important and what's not so that we can appreciate what's important. So we've clearly gone too far if our attitude is that nothing's important. So then there's no point in the sense of humor. It's not accomplishing anything. The whole point of the sense of humor is that it should preserve for us that which should get our focus and our attention. But if our attitude is one of cynicism, of scoffing, so then there's nothing left. Then nothing is important. And then the whole sense of humor becomes a destructive one. So in addition to everything else that we're trying to be careful about in our sense of humor, perhaps this is also at the foundation of what we're trying to avoid. We don't want to become a cynic. We're looking for a very different type of sense of humor. And therefore, it's helpful that as we look to Purim, and Purim is our opportunity to work on and to develop this Jewish sense of humor, that first we have a Shabbos Parsha Zachar, we have a focus on what a Amalek is, so we can remind ourselves of what it isn't. That type of cynicism, that type of knocking everything down, that's the opposite of what we want to be. But a true sense of perspective, a true sense of humor in the Jewish sense, that's what we are striving to accomplish so that we can truly reach the time when we can say, Oz Yamale Schokpinu, when we can genuinely look back and laugh. So just not clear exactly what the timing is, so we'll just quickly go over what we spoke about. We essentially spoke about the question of where does a sense of humor and a sense of laughing fit in a Jewish hashgafa. We talked about that it helps us to cope, to get through the day, and we find that Rav Hirsch made that comment about the Jews declaring Hamabli in Kvarim b'Mitzrayim. We find that if that's the case, so clearly it's also helpful to provide that to others. That's a chesed, and that's an explicit gemara about Rav Broka, who was told that these men had an extra chelek in Olam Haba because they were people who were able to cheer up those who were sad. And we find the Rambam writing this in his medical writings, the idea of being able to tell jokes to people as part of Bikur Cholim. And we find also on an educational scale that as a pedagogical tool, to have a sense of humor is valuable. And the Gemara tells us about Rav Shiurim, how he would start with a Milsib Duchsa, which most but not everyone interprets as a joke. And then we saw the Gemara itself engages in this tool. We talked about the example of the Chulda, and from that perspective it's also valuable. But we also find, even in a more fundamental sense perhaps, when the Gemara tells us about a Kadosh Baruch Hu playing with Eliyasan, we mention of Soloveitchik's interpretation that that's there in order to help us perform the mitzvah of Halachta Bedrachav, that we should be like God and not take everything so seriously. So we suggested that what that means is that a sense of humor is a sense of perspective. It's what allows us to focus on what's important, and that a Kadosh Baruch Hu clearly he has in a sense that the rest of us don't, and perhaps that's why the Gemara says that ba'olam hazeh it's also lamale ischok piv. We can't tell ourselves right now that we have a total sense of perspective, but the day will come oz yamale ischok pina when we'll look back and laugh. And then we suggest that's part of the theme of Purim, that Purim we were makabel the Torah that we were not so happy to accept the first time. We thought it was too rigorous and too many chumras, but after the miracle of Purim we're able to look back and we're able to see how even that is beautiful, and that's something that we're happy to have. And therefore Purim becomes a day where we focus on finding joy in all of these parts of our lives. We mentioned the Shulchan Aruch's psak that one could get married on Purim. Others questioned it. What about Eima Arvin Simcha V'Simcha, at least on a level Midrabanan? And we mentioned the possible distinction between Pesach and Sukkot. We say V'Samachta B'Chagecha, while in Purim it's a Yom Mishta V'Simcha, it's a day of Simcha, but not necessarily exclusively Simcha that comes from the Yantiv. So we talked about how Purim's become a day of joking around, how the Rishonim already talk about a more relaxed attitude towards property rights, things like that. And we talked also about the later developments, the controversial developments of Purim Torah and Purim Shpiels, how many poskim were concerned about both of these innovations, but on the other hand, there is a glorious tradition of engaging in them in our yeshiva, and before that in the Blazhen yeshiva and other such venerable institutions. And we tried to figure out how do we deal with these very serious issues of Kavodat Torah, Albanas Pnei Chaver Barabim, and the like. We mentioned a few possible suggestions, how to say that it's just a joke on the surface is not enough because of the problems with Lashon Hara, Derech Tzchok, and Mechila is also not enough because it's Tzara Degufa, it's personal suffering, so Mechila doesn't really work for that. But we suggested, based on Tosfos and Erech and Bava Basra, that when there's a context that makes it clear that you mean something nicely, then that's acceptable. So perhaps the environment that we have created, we strive to create an environment on Purim where it's clear that everything is said with affection and love and not with any kind of nastiness or hurtfulness. And still we recommend that rabbinic involvement and supervision should be there because it is very fraught. And in addition to these issues, we mentioned also the concern that one might become like a malik, in the sense that a malik is called a letz, and the translation of letz in that context, as Rifut and the Rav Nevinsal and others discuss, is the quality of being a scoffer, a cynic, somebody who thinks nothing is important. And if that's the attitude, so then nothing can get through. As the Sifrei Moser write, that a cynic can keep all Chachma from entering. We suggest that maybe that's why this comparison between Paro and Amalek and Yisro is there right before the Kabbalah Satorah, to show that people like Paro and Amalek, they knock everything down, they don't get the lesson, nothing can get through. There's certain mentalities where no Chachma can enter. Yisro is the opposite, and that mentality of Yisro is necessary in order to receive the Torah. We mentioned the Ramban's comment about how the thunder and lightning was a test to the Jewish people to make sure they're able to see things with an appreciative eye and to not be cynical. And therefore, if the whole purpose of a sense of humor is to have this sense of perspective, so cynicism is the opposite. That's clearly gone too far. That undermines the very sense of perspective which we're trying to accomplish. And we hope that we can use Purim in the proper way. We have Parsha Zachar first to warn us away from the cynicism, so that Purim can be a time when we can innocently and effectively, hopefully without causing any offenses to any human beings and without doing anything to Kavodat Torah, without doing anything negative, only focus on developing this positive Jewish sense of humor, so that we can soon see the time when Oz Yimalei Yitzchok Pinu will Shoneinu Rina. I wish you all a truly Freilich and Purim. It should be only good things, and it should be an Adar of Simcha and Bracha.